Now it's time to get started with the first hour of KSEO Presents, The Doctor and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSEO Presents, The Doctor Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to another Future Tuesday. Beautiful day, last Tuesday of January 2020. Mrs. Future, welcome.
Thank you, honey.
Yeah. Beautiful weather today in Santa Cruz. Sunny. Actually, it was raining when we left Boulder Creek, so it's quite a shift for us.
That's right. Our trees are happy. They'll take every drop they can get.
Coming from the rainforest, the northern rainforest we have. Yeah. Great weather down here. I'm going to stay by the beach, I think, for a little bit this afternoon after the show. Mm-hmm. So, Mrs. Future, anything to report this week that you'd like to share with our audience?
Oh, boy.
Let's see, we had that Scottish party.
Oh, yes. We were invited for haggis on Robert Burns Day at our friend
haggis party. You ever been to a haggis
Karina
party?
Karina and Ryan. Yeah. And, of course, they, being vegetarians primarily,
vegetarian
were
haggis.
Serving vegetarian haggis. Thank
Imagine
goodness.
What that was like.
So
plantain trails.
It was, yes, it was the stomach lining of a few nuts mixed with some sausage spices.
Great conversations there. I met a woman who works at Apple. And she used to be an architect, but she makes way more money at Apple translating American English into Canadian English.
Oh, there you go, all you architects out there. Little warning, don't give up your day job.
It's pretty funny.
Keep your polyglot skills sharp.
Yeah. So Canadians naturally understand American because they live so close. They know everything about our culture. And they have their own culture, so, which is kind of more connected with the British Commonwealth. And that has its own character and spelling of words. And colloquialisms
sure.
and such. So.
And they just got Prince Harry and Meghan Markle coming
That's
over
right.
to spice things up in Canada.
The latest news is because she's American, they have to pay U.S. taxes even when they're in Canada. So they better make a lot of money.
Well, American I don't think taxes, that's going to be their
taxes,
problem. I'm sure they're both quite
UK
confident
taxes.
that's going to work out fine.
Probably so. I'm not too worried about them.
Mm-hmm.
So how about that Middle Eastern deal this morning we were watching with...
Wow, yes. Was everybody paying attention? If you turn the channel from impeachment hearings, then you would notice that President Trump is in Israel. And
is he in Israel? I thought it was in Washington.
Oh, well, I didn't... I just saw the speech. I didn't know where it was. I guess maybe it was in Washington. But he and Netanyahu made a joint announcement that Trump is offering everybody a new two-state solution peace plan in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's all over the news right now. You can't miss it.
Yeah.
The only thing missing were Palestinians. It looks like they've got a great
kinda
deal.
Kind of like
plan.
Our conversation about the homeless. The only people missing were the homeless.
That's true. Uh-huh. That's true. Huh?
The problem solvers are debating how to spend the money to fix the problem, and the people who are wishing the problem didn't exist because they're suffering are just out there suffering. So...
But hey, you know, at least it's an opportunity to keep going on. And I really like the way the president says that he often has compared tough deals to, like, they would talk about it being, well, you know, this is almost as tough as a Palestinian-Israeli deal.
But see, there's you know? Nothing tougher than this.
No, yeah, it's like the gold standard for tough.
Right.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I took note that when Trump first got elected, the first thing he did was his first international trip was to go to Saudi Arabia and Jerusalem and the Vatican. So I think he takes his identity as a good Christian leader very seriously. He's hoping to create peace. For his speech was surprisingly full of respect for the Bible and references to the soul and things that very much humanize who he is.
Okay, well, let's hope for the best there.
I always hope for the best. You know me.
Yeah.
I trust us humans to figure it out and survive these tumultuous times.
Yes. Oh, yes. One of the big things we did this weekend was read Cosmometry, which
right.
was a very interesting book. And the author of that is on the show at 3 o'clock today.
Yes. Marshall Lefferts.
Yes. We'll get more into detail in the second hour for that, which I think you'll find quite engaging because it's a whole new worldview that is worth entertaining at this point in time.
Yeah, just listen to that word, cosmometry.
Hey, Mom.
That was something that Marshall discovered because he was looking for a way to describe his joyful fascination with the harmonies of nature. And boy, did he find some beauty. I can't wait to talk to him about it.
Yeah, that'll be fun. It'll be the second hour right after the news. Meanwhile, let's do a little bit of space news here.
Okay.
Well, today was supposed to be SpaceX launching another 60 Starlinks up into low Earth orbit.
But you know, this is going to stop being a headline
soon.
I know.
That's why I'm milking it for all it's worth here, because I love Starlink so far.
Okay, Starlinks.
Yeah, the new global internet network comes together.
Right.
They're supposed to launch another 60 of the thousands that will be going up.
Right. So they must be on there practically like 300 now, huh?
But, there's always a but.
Uh-huh.
It's delayed.
Oh.
Probably until tomorrow.
Right.
Bad weather in Florida.
Uh-huh. There you go. Well, it's good to take note of the weather. I mean, they did just destroy a booster last week for NASA to prove that they could have astronauts escape from a manned capsule.
In case something goes wrong with the Falcon.
Right.
That was big. Though in this case, the big difference of these next 60 Starlinks going up is that these have been painted black.
That's
a simplified version of that, but basically
that they're not so reflective.
They're not so reflective, so they don't bother the astronomers so much.
There you go, the astronomers. They'll be the same color as all the other junk that's floating out there waiting to become a meteorite.
Yeah. Well, that's the next complaint. The astronomers are now complaining that the fact that they're black, they will create false data. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, a lot of research is going into looking for exoplanets, you know, planets around other star systems. And the way that we can tell how big or the nature of an exoplanet is when it's occulted by its sun or another object in the solar system.
Yeah. Well, but isn't the exoplanet spotter already in space? It's above the atmosphere. Right? The TESS?
Well, some of them are, yeah. But there's a lot of ground-based. But when an object passes in front of its sun and it turns out to be a Starlink and not an exoplanet, it's going to get false data. You see, so having black objects in low Earth orbit will still occasionally block out a telescope.
Some people just cannot be satisfied. Like, there's nothing you can do.
Well, if you're used to having the stars to yourself and then suddenly there's a bunch of stuff between you and them, people are going to bitch. So that's just the nature of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be ways around it, of course. Mm. And that's what we're working on. We're trying to figure out a win-win here.
That's right. A win-win as we become a planetary or a solar system civilization.
Well, actually, Tom Swift had a solution to this particular problem.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. These are the kind of hid ideas that might have some merit in the long run.
That influenced you as a youngster?
For sure, yeah. And one of the ideas was how to make something invisible, like a house or an airplane or whatever.
So that's what we're doing now, is trying to figure out how
to make
these
satellites invisible. Right, so they don't bother the astronomers. How do you make them totally invisible?
Do you have a solution, or is that just a challenge?
The idea was to put video cameras on the device on one side and a screen on the other.
Oh, that's the Tom Swift solution.
So that you could...
That's how spaceships are invisible.
Game of the stars.
Let's make the satellites invisible.
Project the stars on the screen, and then the astronomers will see what was there.
Right back, Dr. Future Show.
All right, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. All right, next news item that caught our attention was how the ISS astronauts succeeded in fixing a $2 billion instrument that was considered unserviceable.
Okay. $2 billion things
littered
all over the ISS.
$2 billion equipment.
$2 billion goes fast when it comes to space.
Well, that's true, too. But this was pretty interesting because this was a gadget called a dark matter detector to detect dark matter, something we basically can't detect. It's kind of interesting.
Kind of like those satellites that are turning black so that we can't detect them.
Fine case of invisibility, discovering invisibility.
Meanwhile, we've got the ISS fixing its equipment to detect dark matter.
To detect what's...
These black Starlinks are not black matter. They're not dark matter.
No, but that's an idea, Mrs. Future. If they were black matter Starlinks, then they certainly would...
Oh, my goodness. If they were dark matter, they'd be invisible.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
There you go. I don't know why Elon didn't think of that.
Maybe he did. He just hasn't quite figured out the technology yet. It takes a long time to pencil in these new
paradigm shifts.
Solutions.
These paradigm shifts in thinking about science is just, you know, they can take you by surprise and make a normal thinker a genius.
Okay. So, dark matter, huh?
Yeah, dark matter.
So, the International Space Station is busy looking for dark matter, and who has a better view than they do?
6 hours and 16 minutes to fix it.
That's just this time.
Yeah. It was two male astronauts on the outside and two female astronauts on the inside helping them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were at the controls, kind of like us. You see how the women are at the computer making sure everything's like coordinated
and
the men are out there doing the heavy lifting.
And we think we're in charge. You know, one slip of a button and we're maybe
teamwork
not so.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
We're muted. Don't turn me down, please.
Not
That's
me.
That's right. She has all the controls there, folks. So
well, the I've offered them to you many times. You prefer that I man the controls so that you can be there focusing on the articles. We've had this conversation
That's
many
true.
Times.
We'll try swapping off sometime, though, because I think you might enjoy this role, too. Mm-hmm. As when you're sitting over here, you can just think about what we're talking about and you have more time to come up with interesting things to say about it.
Oh, well.
Without having to think about when the next commercial is going to happen.
I don't mind just being on short notice.
Okay. Okay. That's what I love about you, Mrs. Future. She's just so happy
with
where you are.
Spontaneity works for me.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Maybe one segment we might switch and see what happens.
Are you saying that you want the volume control?
No. But at some point I might.
Yeah, like at home, when you don't like what I'm saying and you take our little remote control and you click it a few times and it's like, I know you're not listening.
Yeah, I forgot. Sometimes I forget what's real and what's on the screens. The confusion of those two points is getting more and more challenging, Mrs. Fugit.
Uh-oh. Are you getting Alzheimer?
No. This is Al's...
just Al's
mystery.
This is just Al's
mystery memory. I see at a point in time when our digital memories become seamlessly intertwined with our biological ones.
Oh.
And I'm kind of in, I'd like to experiment with that edge between the two. That's why.
Right. Yes, you are definitely in the transition zone.
In our home laboratory, we now have a 4-channel video, digital video mixer that combine HDMI signals.
So are you watching 4 channels of video all the time now?
Not yet, but it will become something we can play with.
So you could just scramble your old memories with your new ones?
4 channels. It means you can have 4 thoughts at once.
Plus already in your head.
More than that, 4 thought trajectories.
That's just one of the mixed tracks.
A thought trajectory is what, say, a documentary will take you on. That's a thought trajectory in your mind as it takes you there. But imagine if you have 4 of those going on at the same time. That's something our synthetic intelligences have no problem with.
You are so ADD.
We all like multiple inputs, but how much of it do we really understand? And you see, the key to all of this is control.
Control. Who are you trying to dominate?
In the sense that you can control how much of the 4 channels you listen to and which one has the higher volume and which one has the lower volume.
Oh, so you're just trying to control your own thoughts. Okay, that's fine.
You got to look at
everybody
how...
Everybody should know themselves.
Everyone should know what their own capacities are and what they can understand.
Sure.
Have you ever noticed, for example, that if you're listening to the radio, like now, and you say you're driving, and you look outside and you notice where you are, and you notice the gas station you're going by, or the signs on the road, and associate later that the conversation you heard on the radio was connected with that space, that
really?
Place.
Does your attention work that way?
Sometimes it does. Sometimes if somebody's saying something interesting, like world peace declared today, you'll look around and you'll notice
where you are. Even
usually
if you're driving.
It's not that significant.
Now, see, I work totally the opposite, because when I drive down a stretch of road that I've driven down many, many times before, that part is on autopilot. That part is not attracting my attention
at all. It's filtered out.
What's attracting my attention is what's new and novel and unique and that I've never had to think
something
about
you've never
before.
Heard before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that takes precedent.
And the rest of it is just background noise.
And you just filter it out entirely.
Mostly, not entirely, because
You have to drive.
I'm in a familiar place. Yeah. I know what the next turn is, you know?
Yeah. Well, as I said, there are like volume controls on these awarenesses that we have control over. And becoming conscious of that and play with that is a fun thing to do.
Well, I guess that it has to be a pretty unique and intense thing for you to pay attention to where you are when you became aware of it, right? These are the cliches. People say, oh, I know where I was standing when the men walked on the moon, or I know where I was when 911 happened,
what I'm saying is Kennedy was shot, yeah, what I'm
or
saying
when
is that
Jerry
it
died.
It actually happens all the time, but most of us filter it out. Unless you don't. Sometimes you can turn that on. Like one time, my brother...
Well, it just becomes extraneous information.
To my brother and I were doing a mundane trip to the grocery store, and we were like, we're fourth grade. And we decided to memorize this list of stuff we're going to get at the grocery store, and then see if how long we can remember it for, just for
you
the
You probably can still remember it, right?
Some of it, yes. And Norm, too.
Did you guys quiz yourself on this the other day?
Yeah, we did.
Did you reconstruct this famous
list? Every so
list?
Often we remember. Remember what we did and we were at it? Yeah, every so often we do that. Yeah.
Oh, and of course, every time
it's
you bring up an old memory, it underlines it and makes it a strong new memory.
Yeah, it brings it back into present space and time. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
So you're resisting Alzheimer's.
Well, let's just say I don't say I'm having any problem. I don't like to put any names on my state of memory unless I have to.
Yeah,
you
sure.
Because I think labels sometimes shape your thoughts towards creating them.
And if you started being worried that you have Alzheimer's,
you start creating it for yourself. There's some level
it.
Of myself where I feel like I might actually start to do that. Or you start learning about it, so I go, what happens in the conditions?
No, that makes sense to me.
See if I can find those patterns in my behavior.
I am
you
of
start
the
finding them and,
that
you, know.
You, the conscious being that identifies as you, the divine Alan Lundell, or me, the divine son Lundell, is the God to ourselves. We get to channel the universe's sense of purpose that gave us this body,
yeah.
And we get to tell ourselves what we're all doing together.
Yeah, so I don't like to talk about, hey, let's share this disease together.
Right.
It's not my favorite.
Right.
<You're> like, I suppose if I had to, I would, but we only focus on disease usually if we have to, unless you're a dedicated health professional.
Sure, and once you do some diagnostic that may gives you evidence that you have a condition, you start focusing on how did that arise. And
yeah,
how
you start getting into it. The universe gives you a focus for your prodigious intelligence.
Yeah, how do you fix what's broken, not how do you surrender to what's broken and make it worse?
You start evaluating, investigating whatever you've got.
Right.
Sure. No, I think that's totally normal. And that's part of the beauty of the net today, too, because if you have anything that you think you have, you can check it out online and see what other people are thinking and start to evaluate it. And you might try to shape the information, but then you'll see how you do that. And, you know, it's a lessons in understanding ourselves, and we have to investigate.
I think it shows a certain level of self-actualization and mastery, too, whether you repeat certain things to yourself that disempower you. And do the neurolinguistic programming to tell you that you don't have control. That's one level of self-actualization, which is, I would say, low on the scale. And then there's the self-actualization where you tell yourself that you can overcome the things that are blocking you. And that gives you a different kind of self-esteem. And one of them, to me, sounds more like you give yourself excuses for being the way you are versus the other one, which gives you challenges to become who you prefer to be.
I'll choose B. Usually.
I love that about you.
But if there's anything to subpersonalities, then some might prefer the other.
Oh, yes.
And there's moods.
That's right.
What all the various subpersonalities are experiencing at any
moment. Yeah, those ones that are bent on your own demise, they will not fess up to their secret agenda.
Unless they have to. Or at the right time for them to be exposed. Yes. Okay, shall we go on to the next story?
I will if you will.
Okay. Anyway, that's the black matter.
The
dark matter unserviceable instrument is now brought back.
Right. And the story you didn't say about that little instrument is that it has been there. It was only supposed to last for 3 years. And instead, they now think it's going to last for the entire lifetime of the International Space Station. And they had 4 spacewalks to go out and fix it because it wasn't designed to last. And so it didn't have the standard tools. It didn't follow the normal instructions to make it serviceable. So now it's serviceable.
Isn't that cool? That's so great. Because we now can study, we can detect the undetectable, dark matter itself.
Mm.
if it works. Now, right. How are they, can you detect it? See, there's another story right there that's not part of today's broadcast, but something we should look at. How do you detect dark matter?
Well, first you have to believe in it.
Yeah, you have to accept the possibility that it might exist. Does dark matter really exist, or is this just a figment of our standard theory of physics?
Well, that's a good thing to ponder during the break.
Yeah.
Do you believe in dark matter?
Or is it just a dark thought?
Well, we can study it from the International Space Station.
Yeah, does your dream include dark matter? I understand Michael Olson has something to say about this.
Okay, here we have it straight from the Michael Olson's mouth.
You're on.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. I have a very simple way to study dark matter.
Really? What's that?
Yeah, just shine a light on it.
Shine them. I don't know, Michael. I think that's going to make it harder to find.
Yeah. But what if the dark matter is behind the light?
Well, that would be interesting, too. But if it's not matter, then you won't be able to see it. So you'll know it's matter because you'll be able to shine a light on it and you'll see it.
Well, I am very glad that this matters so much to all of us.
All right. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks
for that.
If my vision can just see matter, I'd be okay with that. But it seems to be seeing other stuff too.
Oh, really? You mean like rainbow light? What do you mean?
No, I think our eyes detect matter for sure. They're matter detector. Michael Olson's totally right on that.
That's what they're made for.
Yes. And we can see light. You see light and matter. We see them both.
Oh, you think they're different, huh? Light and matter?
Yeah. No, I don't think they're...
What about Einstein? What about E=MC²?
Well, they're interchangeable, but they're different at the same time. They're different forms. Matter and light are different.
Uh-huh.
But they are connected.
Well,
how do you understand
on
that?
The continuum of electromagnetic radiation. Uh-huh. They both occupy different frequencies.
So they're the same electromagnetic radiation, just different spots along the line, like different heights in an elevator.
Yeah, something like that. They're different colors of the rainbow.
Okay, but the same. Yeah, okay. So different and the same. That's the nature of universe, right? Mm-hmm. It's always different and same at the same time, but in a comprehensible way, like a spectrum.
Yes, just like a spectrum.
Okay.
In fact, it is a spectrum.
So is dark matter on the spectrum?
If you believe in it. I don't know. I mean,
dark matter
is a theoretical
hypothesis.
Hypothesis. That I almost said hypotenuse. I knew that wasn't it. Yes. So this hypothesis.
The hypotenuse of the black hole.
It's put out by scientists who are standing on their beliefs, and those beliefs can always be challenged.
Yes. However, if you all agree to the same belief for a while, then you can debate that belief and look at it more deeply. If you all don't, then you don't, because it's not commonly shared as something of interest.
That's right.
So part of the ideas here are because we share it, not because it's necessarily real, ultimately.
That's an interesting point of view. Because we share it, we think it's true.
Yeah.
And it may or may not actually be.
Well, truth is only part of it. It is mostly exploring it. Exploring what is. The exploration is you have common methods of exploring something that makes sense to each other. And that's where it's good to have a shared belief system.
Sure.
Especially in science when things get really loosey-goosey.
Scientists are artists and they are doing their best to question what everyone knows because they have some insight about how it might or might not be what everyone believes. And so that's what we want. That's the best of science. The best of scientists are never afraid to question what we think we know.
Yeah, always kind of question your own ideas is kind of a good exercise. So to leave this conversation, I'll give you the Wikipedia definition of dark matter in one sentence. Okay, dark matter can refer to any substance which interacts predominantly via gravity with visible matter, like stars and planets. Hence, in principle, it need not be composed of a new type of fundamental particle, but could at least be partly be made up of a standard, what they call baryonic matter, B-A-R-Y-O-N-I-C, standard baryonic matter, such as protons or neutrons.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, do we have dark matter within us? It sounds like we do. Protons and neutrons.
Yeah. So if you believe in protons and neutrons, you can believe in black matter. In this model, you know, they can all hang together. They're not from a different universe.
Okay. All right. It's an evolving story.
Yes, it is. Indeed, it is. Perhaps this next story has more of a clue for us. This happens more on the cultural level among scientists. It's a phenomenon known as the doomsday clock.
The doomsday clock. Oh, yes. Many people have been afraid of the doomsday clock for a long time. Do you know who sets the doomsday clock?
Which doomsday clock are you referring to?
Is there more than one?
Well, there seems to be lots of doomsday scenarios. Let's put it that way.
Well, if you ask Great God Google who sets the doomsday clock, they tell you that it was created at the University of Chicago by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists in 1947.
Yeah.
And it is intended to metaphorically alert humanity. Google, you need to fix that word there. It's not mankind, it's humanity, to our march toward midnight, signaling nuclear annihilation.
From what I understand, the reason why it's closer to midnight is because of a combination of vectors. When they started this back in 47, what was the big concern? In your understanding
nuclear
of history.
Nuclear annihilation.
Right. It's pretty big.
Duck and cover consciousness.
Yeah. I grew up with that fear. As a young kid, I was taught that within 20 minutes, we could be vaporized.
If somebody decided to cut loose and they had the know-how.
And it was the bad guys, in this case, the Russian menace that could destroy us at any time. As kids, you kind of believe what the adults are telling you. Right. So that becomes the story.
Well, that whole era is the backdrop for the era we're in now, where nobody wants to believe anything is unchangeable.
The thing is that I was exposed to not just having to do those rituals, but as kids, we were shown movies, right? We were shown movies of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah, they were programming you with the past, with the nightmares of the past.
Well, the nightmares of what happened in the past, but which happened in our future. Movies are a very powerful tool for convincing you that something is real.
But if we are free beings with hearts and minds and the ability to manifest nature through our thoughts, actions, and words, then just because it happened in the past does not mean it will happen in the future.
No, it doesn't. But the invention of nuclear power was something that was eminently, back in the 50s, it was a godsend. It was power. It was unlimitless power, something we're still struggling with now. Hmm. No fuel needed for ships. I remember them holding a handful of pellets. Though I imagine if you actually held the plutonium pellets, it wouldn't be good for your health.
You'd probably lose that hand pretty soon.
Superman holding plutonium. And that this handful could power the NS Savannah, a nuclear ship, for 5 years. Mm. You know, and I said, you think about that versus oil.
Sure.
It's unreal, right? And so as a kid, we believed in that. Mm. But then at the same time, not only could you give this limitless power, but also limitless destruction at the same time.
Hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So we suddenly have the keys to the creation and destruction. That's why Oppenheimer was into the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm. Right, because we've been on this brink before.
The destroyer of worlds. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something about you're close to that spark of creation itself, the fusion reaction that creates universe.
Sure. Well, let's see. Shiva, Vishnu, Brahma. Brahma is birth, Shiva is death, Vishnu is life force in between, and Shiva clears the way so Brahma can be born.
So it's a triadic energy. In that case, three. Because you see, when we look at this from our cultural point of view, our computers are not triadic, they're two-state, dyadic.
Our computers? Oh, because it's a binary
zero,
code.
Zero, one, right, binary. And then
but what about hexacode?
Well, there are examples of other things. But also on the binary, there's also relationships and politics, mm-hmm. all of which are dyadic mm-hmm. by nature. Right. Okay. So could it be that these mythologies of triadic, if we started to apply triadic thinking into our dyadic culture, what kinds of scenarios might happen?
Could you give me an example?
Yeah, like in politics, for example, we have Republicans and Democrats. What if there was a third party that gained some prominence somehow? It looks like almost impossible given today's circumstance, but like in Canada or Britain, where you can have multiple representations, maybe another layer of government that's as powerful as the existing ones to be the third force.
Well, we have three branches of government.
We do.
They're supposed to balance each other out, but
that's
look
true,
how that's
yeah.
going.
Well, maybe another part
it
of the
seems
third.
Seems like Congress is abdicating their part of the triad, and the executive branch is sucking it all up and yeah. turning into a king.
Yeah. What force would create a balance between the three that are there now?
Goodness, morality, acting as if the future was something you were going to improve for the rest of humanity instead of just suck it away from the future generations.
And where would you be able to introduce such ideas into the system?
Well, it's all in the stories. Yeah. In the stories we tell each other. I think if we tell ourselves stories that we stand for goodness and that goodness is something that the average person has access to and doesn't need to be dictated to. We don't need to have power over each other. We just need to have access to the solutions mind and the conversations that create choices. Then we have everything we need. And that's part of a unified consciousness. That's believing that we can trust ourselves and we don't need parents to take over the controls and force everybody else to do what they say.
Yes. I want to refer back for a moment to our previous conversation.
You have 10 seconds.
Okay. We've got to consider the doomsday clock in its totality. And there are two other elements that need to be included in the equation besides nuclear.
Okay.
And we'll introduce that after the break.
All right. Dr. Future Show, we'll be back. 479-1080 if you have something you'd like to contribute.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Welcome. Our guest has arrived a little bit early, Marshall Lefferts. We were just talking about the doomsday clock, to bring you up to speed on this, and that there's a reason why they moved it forward from 120 seconds to 90 seconds. The nuclear holocaust issues are number one.
And nuclear annihilation.
Nuclear annihilation, which we've all been brought up with. And then the scientists are now concerned also about environmental issues, and they think that's the next thing. We not only do we have nuclear today, but we have the issues of the environment.
Oh, so the doomsday clock has been adjusted because of
we have another major threat
climate
to planetary existence.
Threats.
Yeah.
Ah.
Would you agree
okay.
with that?
So annihilation of life as we know it.
Yeah.
Huh? And
yeah.
welcome, Marshall.
Yeah,
welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here with you guys. Thanks for having me on the
sure.
show today. And yeah, I think it's pretty clear that we're in multiple fronts of crises on the planet. And it's probably appropriate to set the clock forward a little bit further.
Right. And would you agree, though, that even though we have more crises than we've ever had, we also have more tools to deal with the crises than we've ever had?
Absolutely. I really feel very strongly that the solutions to the major problems are already out there.
So it's just a matter of discovering them or rediscovering them.
And letting them come into the world. There's some obstacles to that happening that have been around for quite a while, and some of the bigger current paradigm forces that don't really want to make the shift so readily towards things that will obsolete some of the power that that structure is based on.
So you think we still
prevented
needed,
that?
Yeah, they could have. But do you think it's still useful to have measures like this, like the doomsday clock?
For a little while, hopefully for not too much longer.
Are you saying you want to move the doomsday clock all the way to the end?
Yeah,
that's right.
Are you motivated by
go past the whole idea of
let's
doomsday?
Go past the whole idea. Oh, yeah, kind of like in 2012 when we went past the end of time, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But don't you think
here
that,
we are.
Don't you think that deadlines are a necessary evil?
They do come in handy, and I don't think there's anything wrong with having some serious pressure on us right now to make the shift. And
so, there you go.
So you'd rather not have to be under stress to solve this, and hopefully we can.
Well, and the thing is that we can remove the stressors in this world by really allowing some of the new technologies that can solve major problems in the world.
Mm.
And also not just technologies, but new paradigms for social infrastructure and things like that, that can help us to make that shift where we get out of
make it a little easier. It's a few new tools to play with.
Yeah.
As well.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good. Well, we'll look forward to seeing with something even better than the doomsday clock when we go into detail in the next hour.
Let's see. We got just another 10 minutes here on some of our headlines. So before we dive into the fascinating world that you bring us to.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Go for it.
There was construction completed on the largest 3D printed building in the world.
Wow.
31 feet tall, 6,900 square feet, new building in Dubai. It's the largest 3D printed building in the world, a two-story structure. They got two stories now with 3D printing.
The big story there is that they only had three humans involved in the process.
Three people involved are on the printer. The printer was printing with a gypsum-based material.
Right, so
which kind of is good for walls.
It sounds kind of like one of these Star Wars giant robots that marches forward, and I'm just imagining something that sucks in the dirt and the sand, mixes it, and then spits it out as a goo.
It goes around a
3D printer.
Well, it's a goo, but it's sprayed around a scaffolding made out of rebar.
Oh, okay.
Set in pre-made concrete blocks, which are pretty standard out there today, too.
Oh, it sounds horribly
precast
ugly.
Precast slabs.
Does not sound attractive.
I know, but you could have flow form concrete slabs. Don't fault concrete, just the designer.
We so designed their goal was not beauty. It was to be in the Guinness Book of World Records as the largest 3D printed building.
Yeah, well actually it also is the same. Yeah, the aesthetics come later. The basic idea of building with this is going to reflect the values of the existing paradigm, which is to work with squares.
Well, and I'm sure it'll help us put a little colony up on the moon and on Mars.
Yeah, it might help that. On domes on Mars could be good.
Maybe on some of those asteroids.
Until we have an atmosphere there, I think domes are a great idea, especially on Mars. So
let's dash through some of these other really great headlines that you put together.
Yes. Also, the lithium, very low doses of lithium may halt Alzheimer's progression.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting story.
The big news here is that lithium is well known for treatment for depression. Mm-hmm. But they found out that if you use it for Alzheimer's patients, it has some negative values and it doesn't necessarily have as many positive values as they liked. But in this study, they lowered the dose to 1/100th. Of the amount
that's
for depression.
Compared to what's used in psychological uses. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they found that seems to have some positive results in helping to dissolve plaque, in helping to facilitate the neural connections, et cetera.
It's called microdosing lithium.
Microdosing lithium.
Right. It doesn't just make you happy anymore. It's good for your brain.
Yeah.
And of course, Hoffman was looking for the phytogene. It was called
hydrogen.
That was it. The hydrogen was what he attributed his brilliant clarity of mind to past the age of 100 was because he was taking a daily dose of this hydrogen, which was probably a hydrogen-based stimulant.
Well,
of
it was
course,
a combination.
Lithium is the next.
Albert Hoffman?
Yeah, Albert Hoffman. Oh. It was a combination of hydrogen for the biology of the brain, of the neural system, and the lysergic acid for the mental aspects of his nervous system.
He did a
microdosing.
He said he was looking for hydrogen when he discovered lysergic acid.
That was earlier. That was the origin story. But when he found later the use story of the two, it was quite interesting.
So he was microdosing those two things?
My understanding, yeah.
Oh, very cool. Didn't hear that.
Okay.
So microdosing lithium in this case seems to be good in case you're worried about Alzheimer.
Just not, yours.
According to this article, we have the... Okay, Mrs. Future.
That's the one I'm worried about. Yeah. I'm not saying that you have it or
no,
anything.
No. Well, you know, one can hope my plaque is being cleaned out right now.
Your plaque and your doomsday clock.
Yeah, no, you probably wouldn't choose that story if you were choosing stories.
That's why
right?
we let you yeah. choose the stories, Dr. Future. You got your finger on the pulse.
Yeah, well, these things do get my attention.
I like your attention.
Okay, something really positive was found about butterflies.
Do tell.
Butterfly wings are not passive. They're like intelligent.
Right. They're not dead paper.
No.
They're living tissues that work sort of like eye nerves.
Yeah, they have behaviors.
They can sense light.
Wow.
They sense lights. They know how
That's
to
cool.
direct themselves in relation to the light at any given moment to not overheat.
Yeah, the wings say, where is the sun?
Wow.
And they go towards yeah. it if they need to be warmer, and they go hide from it if they need to be cooler.
Wow, so they're optical sensing, or at least light sensing.
Yeah, they're using light to figure out how to control the heat.
They say, essentially, they're vector light detecting panels by which they can accurately determine intensity and direction of sunlight.
That is cool.
They do it swiftly without even using any eyes.
Hmm.
Just the wings.
Hmm.
Right.
That is amazing. I'd never even imagined that.
I know, right?
Leave it to the butterflies.
Yeah. That's right. Leave it to the butterflies.
Yeah. So this is teaching us about building technology that utilizes those principles. Advanced flying machines, they would be cooled more efficiently than anything we have now, and just a big issue with technology, cooling.
Right.
Radiative cooling.
So listen, time is getting short, but I do want to just point out this one other really interesting headline that
yes.
you collected, which is that apparently there has been a successful test for using human stem cells in the treatment of pain.
Yes, yes, very interesting.
Do you want to...
The idea of controlling pain has been something that we really want to achieve in our culture, right? And
apparently the pain that that is being tested in rats is the kind of pain that's associated with phantom limbs, or where an injury has failed to heal and people feel chronic pain. And apparently the triggers that are causing the pain are in the spine. And so this treatment is taking stem cells, multipluripotent stem cells, and then actually developing
pain,
them.
Making pain-killing neurons.
Right.
From the stem cells.
And
pain-killing
neurons. These are called GABAergic cells. So they
G-A-B-A
induce the
E-R-G-I-C.
Stem cells to become a certain sort. Then they inject them in the spine, and apparently it's having a positive
Safe,
effect.
Safe, long-lasting, effective relief,
right.
just like you hear in the commercials,
okay.
from extreme neuropathic pain.
KSCO Santa Cruz, Dr. Future Show.
Oh,
we're
nice.
Going to go to a little traffic news weather break and then be back with our guest, Marshall
yes.
Leberts.
And cosmometry. See you in a few.